The Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Welcome to Desert Island Discs. Is this your first time on the show?
No, Flavia.
It would be a shame if we've never profiled you.
It's not my first time. And I hope I'm one of your few guests that are doing it more than twice. I feel so.
Yes, you're in a rare category. You're in a rare
25 years later, a quarter century ago.
Imagine.
I think by then you are hardly.
Who was your host? Don't tell me William Pike.
It must have been,
yes,
because
that
was
time,
1998.
William Pike.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so that means you've lived through the older generation and the younger generation.
Absolutely. I think by then you were in baby class or something.
Imagine. 25 years ago, I was 10.
Can
I was 10
imagine,
years old.
Can you imagine primary school?
So P5, yes.
I'm so lucky.
So a lot of your close friends or people who are fond of you don't say honor, Peter. They say honor.
Yes. It dates back to my early days in journalism. I was at the Monitor, and we pioneered a style of writing. It was names, shortening them.
Right.
So there are a couple of political actors who had long names. Some of the most famous names them were James Wapakabulo. Very long name, so we called him Wapa. Paul Kawanga Semogere, we just called him Semo.
Ah, okay. So, and you also were
so
part
you
of that.
So you truly ended up becoming Ona.
Okay. So Ona Pito Ekomoloit. What do your names mean? Because I'm not, before you even tell me, they just sound like they mean something very profound.
Doesn't have a specific meaning, but it could mean carrying, maybe like you are referring to people who are carrying something. They were carrying or were wearing.
Right.
So there are various interpretations.
Just picked by who? Because then did someone just wake
no,
up and
in
say?
In terms of names, generally, they are inherited through families. So
right.
You are mostly named after your parents, your grandparents. We don't tend to pick names.
You don't reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, but of course things are changing. Like my own children, I've given them names that I think relate to what I want them
to be.
To represent.
Let's start your story. You have written a book. You've written it at the, not, I wouldn't say the end of your journey, because you're still going. You know, there's a lot more that you could share or create or do. But you've written at a point where you believe you've lived a full life. You've done a lot. It's wholesome. So we want to go all the way back to the beginning. I've read a couple of interviews you've done and a few things you've written, and you really love your beginnings. So where are we starting? Ona's story. At what age is that? Where are you throwing us?
For me, it begins early. My consciousness, unfortunately, is when I get orphaned as a young boy in P2. That's when I lost my dear mom. So that's always something that I believe has defined who I am. It immediately made me to start living the hard way. Fortunately, during the good old days, if there was such a thing, you had a large family.
Right.
So a child would always be cushioned from any adversity.
Yeah.
And certainly I was cushioned. But that was a very defining moment for me. Also because it nearly derailed my education.
Nearly,
because I was just joining P3. But life lost meaning, education lost meaning, and I stayed out of school for 2 terms of P3, resisting all efforts to keep me in school.
You resisting?
I was resisting because certainly the family was one that loved education. I had older siblings who were all doing well in school, and in university, in secondary school. So it was an anomaly for me to try and keep out of school.
And not be in school.
So the family members, they really...
Was it trauma that you chose not to?
It must have been the trauma of...
And at that age, you're very close to your mom.
Yes.
It's a gap.
It is a gap. And you know, school was 2 kilometers away. School did not have school lunch. School, there was a lot of corporal punishment.
And the person you would have cried to is gone.
It's gone. Mm. So school was a complete nightmare.
Oh, no.
So all efforts were done. Oh, were made to beat me.
I was about to say, I'm inquisitive on what efforts these were. Beating also was involved.
Yes, this, of course. This, you know, I remember in the extreme, I would have to be tied. My hands would be bound to just restrain me from running away.
Wow.
And then I marched to school. But still,
wait.
School. But one day, there was even a very dramatic situation. I pleaded that, please, I'm ready. You untie me. I'll not run away. But as soon as they untied me,
you ran
off into the bush.
Oh, my.
I took off.
And so for 2 terms, that was you.
That was me. And I would have been a P2 graduate. I don't know if there's such a thing.
Absolutely. Not a dropout, a graduate.
Because these days, children graduate from even top class.
Exactly. What was your relationship like, you know, with siblings or people at home, dad?
My dad was a medical practitioner. So at that stage, he was not at our village home. He would be at his workstation.
All right.
But still, he would come in and he would be one of the people.
Tying
and getting me to school. And he would hear the guys refuse school. But he did his best, like all the family members. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I was back in school.
So when dad was away, in the case now when mom passed on, unfortunately, who is the one at home, you know, sort of having the realms and saying, I am the one responsible for everybody?
I had an auntie, a sister to my father. She basically took over the household. I was the third last born.
It Takes a Village was actually a thing that existed.
Yes, it was real.
Yes.
It was real.
Speaking of It Takes a Village, talk to me about where you grew up from. You know, you're very passionate about Amoria, but Amoria is in a sense, it's like saying I grew up in Uganda. Uganda is vast and large, you know. Narrow it down
my
for us.
My original ancestral village is in a place called Achisa, and that is in Ikobwin sub-county, in what you today know as Ngora district. In fact, 1956 to be precise, my dad relocated to our village now, which is called Asalata. Asalata Vinateso is a very interesting name because it means the millet bread has remained our traditional food. It's a place where one would say there was plenty of food. So Atap would always remain.
Right. And,
so that is our village, and the sub-county is called Wera.
What used to excite you? You know, as a child growing up, some things you know?
Teso was a cattle society.
Yeah.
What I liked most was setting bulls to fight.
Oh, wow.
Such a wonderful sport. In fact, these days I've been thinking, wow, why don't I start a sport of bull fighting, a traditional way, not the Spanish way.
Interesting.
It's a very interesting thing to watch because bulls can fight for hours and climb on an anthill to stay safe.
Imagine the things that excite. You know, as someone said that when boys are growing up, the things that make sense to them.
And milking, of course.
Yes.
We used to, at some point, we used to milk raw milk from the udder direct into the mouth.
Oh, wow.
In Ateso, it's called Idal.
To be honest, I don't want to say I don't know that exists because we also, I'm from a place where cows are predominant. And yes, that happens. Of course, today, if you say that to children of today, they'd find it a bit odd. You have to package milk in a pack and boil it.
Yes.
Interesting. What would be your first song choice, Ona?
I think my first song would be The Goodness of God. I'm a long way. The song speaks for itself.
The goodness
of God.
Of God.
I love you, Lord, for your mercy never fails me. All my days I've been held in your hand. From the moment that I wake up until I lay my head, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God. 'Cause all my life you have been faithful, and all my life you have been so good. With every breath that I am able, oh, I will sing of the goodness of God. I love your voice. You have led me through the fire. darkest night. You are close like no other. I've known you as a father. I've known you as a friend. And I have lived in the goodness of God.
Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Welcome back to Desert Island Discs, and that was The Goodness of God. I think based on his first part of life, I think he says the message makes a lot of sense. Honor Pito Ekomoloit, we're going to say honor or refer to you as honor for the rest of this conversation. You are now the chairman for the Nile Breweries Board, and I was going to say, you're one of those people who say I'm retired, but not really retired. You're retired out of being busy. And as I asked you earlier on before we got on the show, you now pick and choose what your day looks like, isn't it?
Yeah, it's you retire from salary, and then you retire to making your money the hard way.
and is it harder? or you were excited to go into
it? No, I think for me, when you choose to retire, as I did, you should now be ready to take life as it comes.
Right.
Because no 2 days are the same. Each day comes with its own challenges. But it's a mental game.
True.
If you are ready for it, then it becomes easier.
When we get to that part of your life in this show, I'll probably ask you how long it takes to fully plan for retirement. How long you work backwards? Do you plan 10 years in advance mentally? But we're going back to the place where you were a young boy. You had lost your mom. And one of the things that started to not make sense to you was going to school. But you say eventually you stabilized. So now you're growing up as a young boy.
Yes.
Paint for us that picture.
Look, I think when I went back to school, there was no turning back.
Right.
And I thank my late brother, who was called David Oluka. He's the person who actually turned the clock for me, because he took me back to school to face a teacher whom I thought would kill me. Okay. Staying out of school for 2 terms. Mm. But lo and behold, when he spoke to the teacher, he was a university student. When he spoke to the teacher, I don't know what exactly they spoke. The teacher never said any word to me, never laid any
cane. Didn't bring it up.
And yet this teacher was a terror of the school. Mm. You know, just going late, any small mistake.
And you had stayed away 2 terms.
2 terms. I knew I would be
that would
dead.
Be worse.
So from that day up to today, I stayed in school and there was no turning back.
Did you enjoy it?
I now enjoyed school. Mm-hmm. I started developing ambitions. That was, first of all, my school was called Angolewera Primary School. Very famous school in our Muria area. Mm-hmm. And I was in that school up to P5. Mm-hmm. Then when the time for joining P6 came, there was now a big, big hiccup for me.
Okay.
Because in the rural schools, we definitely hardly spoke English, especially outside class, we would speak Ateso. Mm. But the P6 teacher or class teacher did not speak Ateso. She was from our neighboring cousins, we call them the Kumam. Mm. So for her, she insisted on speaking English. And if you are found speaking Ateso, she would get you to where I born.
Oh, wow. We all lived through the same school then. I was a cow horn.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
So I was so scared. Fortunately, my dad asked me whether I wanted to continue that school or to go to a family of his cousins who are somewhere in Bukedia, a place called Kidongole.
Okay.
I immediately chose
that trip.
The trip to go away. Mm. To avoid the English.
You walked out of a school because of English.
Yeah.
what was so difficult? You were studying it and writing it.
Look, I mean, in the village schools, English
having to speak it all the time was where the problem was.
Yes, you can't. Constructing a sentence can be a challenge.
Really?
And you're so terrified of English, you know.
To that extent.
Yes.
Wow. So where you went, you were still able to not have to speak English all the time.
I didn't know whether there would be such a teacher. Unfortunately, I think there was no such a teacher in that school. So I went to Kidongole Primary School, Kedia, and stayed there for 4 years.
Right.
That's where I completed P7, but did not join secondary school.
Okay.
Because those days, it was not so much about failing as such, but getting a secondary school was not up to you. You had to wait until when your first choice or your second choice admitted you. But I was not, luckily or unluckily, I was not admitted.
Yeah, so you mean you went through P7 the first time, asked for a choice, didn't get it, and you went back and did P7?
Yes.
Is that how things had to be then? I'm confused.
That's how things were, and you even had to change your name if you had to repeat. So at some point I changed my name to Otim Richard.
What? Just to do P7 again?
Yes.
And were you eventually admitted as honor?
Yes, eventually anyway. I sat P7 for the third time.
Wow.
And that's when I got a chance, because I changed schools.
Mm.
I went back to my old schools. So I was able to revert.
Ah, to your name. Right. Wow.
This time I ended up initially for hardly a month in a school called the Remus College. I don't want to call it obscure because it's in the school in Soroti Town. In Soroti Town then. Mm. Today is Soroti City. But my stay was cut short.
Mm-hmm.
And then I began a journey of studying virtually in every corner of Uganda, luckily.
Mm-hmm.
So my brother, who had succeeded in getting me back to school, was working in Mubende now. So he brought me from Soroti and took me to a school called St. Edward's Bukumi. So it was a blessing in disguise.
Okay.
Because that's, for me, that's really what opened me to
that's
the world.
Turning point.
So I went to Bukumi and stayed for only 1 year.
Oh, okay. We're talking about how fantastic the opportunity was, and then you said 1 year. Why?
Two obvious reasons. One, my brother, I got transferred to
somewhere
Gulu.
Else. Okay,
was transferred to Gulu,
mm.
and then the idea of me staying there
without him.
Coming from Teso was out of question.
Okay,
so I went to Gulu and joined the Gulu Secondary School. But remember, this had at the height of the political turmoil that I had fled from in Mubende, followed me there. Because that was in 1984, soon after 1985, the Obote II government fell. Then in 1986, when I was completing my S4, Tito Okello fell and ushered in Yoweri Museveni.
Yes.
So all that time, there was a lot of chaos. And each time there would be a fall of government, I had to escape to Teso.
The generation today, COVID is the most instability they know, to be honest.
I know.
They'll tell you that's the one time they didn't know whether to continue with school, not continue with school, do this or not do that. But you're talking about, especially my guests who've lived through that time, especially in their school days. I say, today it's easy to tell a child to dream big, to think big of their future. But isn't it nearly impossible to think of a future if you're in such situations? 1 minute you have this government, 1 minute you don't. Today this is safe, tomorrow it's not. What kind of life were you living? What was the mindset then, you know?
I think the power of purpose, fortunately, is what carried me through all that. Because,
interesting. So secondary school eventually gets done.
That's all level. I moved to Kampala and I was studying.
Ah.
I moved to Kampala because I had my brothers here. I moved to the house of my brother.
Yeah.
To spend the all level holidays. And that's when I started being the city boy.
Your smile got wider when you spoke about Kampala.
City boy in a real meaning.
Are you serious?
Yes. What could be more of a city boy than working a taxi?
Yes. Conductor, driver.
Masao, conductor.
But now how do you get this job?
It was a family taxi.
Okay.
My brother's taxi.
Wow. I need to hear these stories. But before that, what's your second song choice? Conductor honor. What's your second song choice?
I think
choice?
Now since we are talking about Kampala life.
But I hope listeners can hear. Even his voice has gotten pitched. He's excited.
Let me go with a song that lately is one of the people's choice in Kampala. Siri Regular.
Siri Regular. Spice Diana.
Brian Beats. No man. Le 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 le.
dali Wasi tota kula wasi sitira Aya semba yone ya soka webicho Ah webicho Tebiri muya kusosola Aya funadulira munembu mwatira Atafuma yeo za kombu mwapapa Kusala Nzendi mumbe janja ukamuko Tema mbozo tulo Wenjagala njagala kumacha mutundu Kone chilo Tendi wambala super quality Tugende ngomanyi Juwa mebi ange vichuka muko Ya doni na majirola beyo City Rachula Ya dawa wala bakwefa seyo
Capital FM, fresh hits for Uganda.
Interesting. This is Desert Island Discs. We are casting away on a Pito Ekomoloit, chairman of the board at Nile Breweries. And City Regular Spice Dan, I'm quite sure you're saying, what? That was, I think you're the second guest who has shocked us with that request. But we were at a point where you have arrived in Kampala. First of all, had you ever come to Kampala before that trip?
Yes, I'd been in Kampala after Mubende before relocating to Gulu.
To Gulu, yeah.
My brother first put me at the house of my sister in Bugolobi. So I had a very limited idea of anything.
Oh, you were not getting out much?
Yeah, or beyond Bugolobi, yeah. Yes.
And this time when you came back?
Yes, this time I came to really be a city boy.
Yeah.
Our taxi would fly... Kampala Gayaza, so I got very familiar with the Kalere, Imperere.
And were you one of those, what we know today as conductors, who had their own way of singing melodies, calling onto people?
Then you didn't have to go to that extreme because the taxis were not so many.
Yes.
Yeah, there was still in fact, people used to scramble for taxis.
Wow.
You'd find the whole stage full of people. All you had to do was to be as fast as possible, and that's why the Kamunye name was coined. Yeah.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Now you're educating me.
Yeah,
Kamunye. I always just thought it was
the falcon.
Yes.
Yes.
Pick quickly and go.
Absolutely.
Yes. Oh wow! And your time as a conductor owner, how was that?
That was a very interesting time. Because my biggest challenge was Luganda, remember?
Today, if somebody tells you that they've come from wherever they've come to be a conductor, it's something they wouldn't be very proud of. But you have put a big smile on your face, almost excited to tell us that you were a conductor.
No, I was, yes, I was very excited because, look, I mean, this was really a test of resilience,
yes.
A test of adaptability, and also the love for work, you know.
So you were getting paid. We've called it a job.
I was getting paid within the context of family income, not really a salary as such.
Yeah.
When you're in a taxi, you have some money, you can eat what you want. I remember I used to enjoy fish, fresh fish, a bienyanja.
And where were you getting that? Just
during
on the
lunch
roadside.
Break, of course, in taxi, you take a break and you have those restaurants.
Maybe
in Gaza.
Mama Naka.
Yes.
Now we know. So you were meant to go to university at that point.
Yes, I first had to go through A level, which happened at St.
Oh,
Saint
you had actually come
Toronto.
To Kampala,
yes.
For A level.
For all level holidays.
And into A level.
Ended up briefly at Kampala High, for S5, and then eventually at St. Peter's College, Tororo.
Ah.
One of the coolest schools.
I was about to say, you must have loved that one.
Yeah, that was a bit of fun. I was also now much more focused on initially wanting to become a lawyer.
That was your choice. It was never one of those things where your parents choose. And dad, you said, was in the medical world.
Yes, that was my choice, but I never ended up
Journalism called you?
Yes. It was one of those changes. When I was in primary school, I wanted to be what is called in Atteso, Ekimat.
Ekimat.
Ekimat is a clergyman.
Parish. A church?
Anglican.
Really?
Anglican priest.
What?
That's what fascinated me when we were in primary school, because he was a highly respected person.
Absolutely.
In the area.
Till today, actually.
Yes. Mm. And eventually I wanted to be an ambassador.
You wanted the honors and respect, I can see.
Then I wanted to be a lawyer because of the grades in arts. But after the 11th hour, that was my course. Then I changed to mass communication.
You need to be able to be either a people person or know how to communicate to people if you end up on any spectrum of journalism or mass communication. Let me say it as wide as possible. Had you already seen that in yourself?
I believe so. Because also remember, I had just got into school politics, the campaign, and ended up as a deputy head boy. So I think that desire to communicate, that desire to change the world,
yes,
is sort of something which journalism has.
Absolutely.
And when I joined the university, I became a correspondent for the weekly topic. I was able to earn money while at the university. I've never looked for a job.
Wasn't it paying by word count?
Yeah, paying by word count. So, but any
I'm trying
money
to say that,
when
that listeners know it's not a lot of money.
Know,
when he says I was getting paid, it doesn't mean millions were trickling in.
But when you can earn your own money,
it's good money.
A lot. I always tell every young person.
Every one of us is a different storyteller. Even if it's radio here, I'm going to be different from the next presenter because of how I choose to take things from my mind to the people. How would you describe yourself? Forget how people describe you as a storyteller. How would you describe yourself as a storyteller? You know?
It's actually hard to tell how you tell your story, whether you're a good storyteller. It's a listener who can determine that's something we learned in mass communication. That the most important
the
aspect of communication
is feedback.
Absolutely. So it's only other people who can truly characterize how you tell your story. You cannot.
Do you come from university straight to your journey at the Monitor?
Yes. I became one of their pioneer reporters in 1992. So it was quite seamless. So we grew with the paper.
Yes.
I remember my story was in the second edition of the Monitor.
I mean, is it the same pomp and pride as it would be now, back then?
I don't know about today's newspaper life, but I don't think it's as exciting as it was, because there's a lot of alternative media.
Yes,
yes. For us,
you were the only source, almost. Actually, you were the only source.
Yes, newspaper was everything. We still had only
one television,
two radios,
yeah.
All the private FM radios were yet to come. So the star journalist was really powerful.
Wow.
And if you're a young reporter seeing your story in the front page, it meant the whole world was at your feet.
Yes.
And people paid attention. They paid attention to a story. If you broke a corruption story,
there must have been many good days, as they call them. You know, whether it's a story you've written, broken, whatever, but you know those days where even the newsroom is shaky. It's on fire. You know, everyone is, you're excited. And sometimes I keep telling people, sometimes that used to happen in the newsroom when the story wasn't necessarily to the public good, or even if it's a negative story, but one that sparks, you know, some joy. What was a good day for you that you can remember in the newsroom?
My biggest day was actually while I was still on campus and at Weekly Topic. I got my story to become the lead of it was a weekly paper, the lead of the week. And the headline was, Inkanji Defends Pajero Culture. And you know, that was late Mayanja Inkanji.
Yes.
Was the Minister of Finance. And I don't know what he exactly said while he was on campus, and it led to me writing that story. But he was basically defending ministers using Pajeros. By then, Pajero was the ultimate car, because the NRM government had come to power exalting the virtues of simplicity. Ministers had to use, there were cars called Laurels. But now, suddenly, they started using Pajeros, you know. And so it was at odds with government kind of state austerity and revolutionary lifestyle. Mm. So it's marked of acts of corruption. And so it looked a big story.
Yes.
But for me, it was my first lead story in the newspaper. And I really walked with a spring on campus.
There you go. And of course, people knew it was you.
Yes,
you know, because they keep telling people with print, your name is there. But sometimes it doesn't go. Because today, I mean, when you're seen or heard, it goes faster.
Everyone in the country would notice you have written a story.
What was the celebrity status like?
It was great. And, but then for me, when I got to the main newspaper, this was now at the Monitor.
Mm.
What used to really make my day was a column called Face to Face with an Apito Ekomoloid.
You ideally were doing what I'm doing today.
Yes.
You would sit down with the who's who, basically, or people who have either achieved or done something great, and ask them questions in face to face.
Yours is more friendly.
So tell me, yours was brutal.
Mine was brutal.
Oh,
looking
wow.
Gotcha.
You're almost listening to wait for something
yes.
to pop off in face to face with Ekomoloid. And any guests that stood out for you that you remember, even if it was brutal as possible?
Three guests. One was I went to Malawi. Some workshop journalists organized by the U.S. Embassy. And the opposition leader, they were about to have elections. I became the first foreign journalist to interview the opposition leader who ended up becoming the president and brought that interview to publish in the Monitor.
Wow.
Then the other person I remember interviewing was the late John Garang and also his opponent, then Riek Machar.
Yeah.
I interviewed both of them. But the most memorable for me was with someone who was a Qadi by then, was Sheikh Luemba. There was a conflict among Muslim leaders in old Kampala, and was one leading one faction. So I was interviewing him, and for him, he insisted on answering in Luganda.
Which by now could you speak or could you understand?
No, wow. I would ask questions in English.
And he would reply to you in Uganda. There you go. And as a journalist, you're noting down. What are you noting down if you don't understand?
I would record the interview.
Okay.
Then I think.
Then you go back and.
Yes. So one of the things he said during the interview, which has stayed with me up today, was a Luganda phrase to the effect that I would say, but some people are saying this. He say, "Ebia, some people muveko."
Muveko.
Muveko. Which would mean what?
Leave the opinion of other people.
The idea of other people. Listen to me.
Wow. Interesting. What's your third song choice at this point?
I guess from my own story, you have to take one day at a time. So
that's
one
true.
Day at a time, sweet Jesus.
Linda Randall, One Day at a Time, Sweet Jesus.
One day at a time, sweet Jesus. That's all. What I I'm just a woman. Help me believe in what I could be and all that I am. Oh, show me the stairway that I have to climb. Lord, for my sake, teach me to take one day at a time. One day at a time, sweet Jesus. That's all I'm asking of you. Just give me the strength to do every day what I have to do.
found me today. Show me the way, one day at a time.
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Desert Island Discs, Linda Randall, One Day at a Time. Sweet Jesus. Ona, you know, journalism today, and I think even then, I actually assume back then it was more vibrant. Because like you said, there's many options now for people to access information, stories, news, opinions. But then print was a big deal. I tell people that today we have a choice when you do mass communication or journalism, whether you really want to go into print or not. A lot of us opt not to. Because telling a story written, to narrow it down, I think Twitter is where people are trying to do that, where you have to narrow your thoughts down to a certain number of words. It's a skill. Did you get mentorship? Did you get some sort of training? I mean, what led you to excel at the level you excelled at, if I could ask that? What or who, actually? Yeah.
I think the first thing about journalism is more like sports, because it's about doing.
The more you do.
More you do.
That's true.
The more you perfect it. And that means also you need to have a certain level of passion. You know? But ultimately, we all need mentors, yes. I think the lecturers at the university, who also happened to be some of them, were newspaper editors, like
because you also
Charles
stayed,
Onyango-Bo.
You stayed and lectured,
yes,
actually.
Yes. Mm. David Ouma Balkoa, those were people who are our lecturers, but also editors at the Monitor. They also the late Kevin Aliro and the late Richard Tebere. They are columns. They seem to be wordsmith of some sort. You're always so mesmerized by the way they wrote.
Mm.
And we learned a lot from them.
But there's a point where, because when I read your story, there's a point where before the politics, there was the crusader.
There was a rupture at the Monitor between us and our idols, the editors, the lecturers, but these things happen. So we ended up a couple of, almost a dozen young journalists.
Wow.
Walked out of the Monitor and founded the crusader. Of course, again, we're inspired by the people who are walking away from.
You went into politics. You almost sound, not just like our president, but most of our politicians, people have asked me. The people want me. So, Ona, did the people really want you?
To be honest, I would be lying if I said the people wanted me.
You were the people.
Look, as I said, look, I was a political animal.
Yeah.
There was an opportunity. It was a by-election. My MP had gone on to become the army commander.
Yeah.
Odong, yes. So there was, I think timing is everything in politics. Sometimes it's sort of element of surprise. So I went in at complete novice, not so known to most people.
Because had you been in the communities?
Yeah.
Had you?
But I guess the elite within the constituency know me because of my journalism. But what really worked for me was family name.
Ah.
My father, whom I told you was a medical person, had done tour of duty in many parts of the constituency, and he was a reputable medical person.
Right.
So people generally said, well, if he's as good as his father, then we know he should be able to, as they said, the apple does not fall far from the tree. And so I went.
And obviously he approved your
seat. He approved. In fact, I remember he's the first one I asked, and he just remarked that 100%.
Wow.
My chance of winning.
Wow.
And was spot on.
Wow.
I ended up winning the by-election.
Mm-hmm.
Just like that. I fell into things.
Indeed falling into things. Because I was about to say, here's you saying, let me take a chance, let me do it, then it happens. What surprised you when you started your actual work, the doing, as we're calling it, for journalism, this time for politics?
What surprised me, I think, is what surprises many members of parliament, is that you are not as powerful as the electorate sets you up to be. This honorable is honorable, but it comes with unrealistic expectations. That when you get to the house, you are going to change the world for every constituent. They are the messiah they have been waiting for, and ultimately you are not, you know, because the reality of being a member of parliament is that you are full of good intentions, but the resources to move things in your constituency the way and at the speed you desire is not there within your hands. they were government structured. The money you appropriate in parliament ends up with the districts or with the ministries,
mm-hmm.
where your hands are generally tied. So you have a lot of disconnect.
And also
now people expect you then to really deliver on your promise.
Yes.
And then you have to dig into your shallow pocket, and it's often not enough.
Mm.
Yeah.
What?
So I ended up having a very short stint, yeah. partly because of that mismatch of expectations,
right.
and reality.
And also your constituency members and other people, you're going to start explaining to the process of how things work.
No, they don't understand that.
And they're not interested.
You can't blame them. There's a whole political culture which built the MP to be, as I've said elsewhere, Father Christmas.
Mm.
And you can do everything. Not even a president can do the things that an MP should do. That's what is in the minds of the people.
That's true.
Yes.
So you decided politics won't be for me for this reason.
Well, the people decided partly because they refused
this
to
This time
relax.
The people decided. This time the people decided.
Yes. Reality.
Yeah.
And they decided to retire me early.
Mm.
And after a short stint of barely 4 months, I left parliament.
Mm-hmm.
Against my will.
Okay.
But maybe it was a
You would
blessing.
Have continued.
I had gone to run for the election.
Because you see, so if you're telling me it was hard, you know there's one thing, but then you're saying it was hard, there was a disconnect, and yet you still went back.
Yes, I wanted to get re-elected and hoping that I would be able to do much more than I'd done within the short period.
Mm-hmm.
But the voters were impatient.
Yeah.
They told me.
You so were you hoping in two terms you would have
ironically
fixed it?
They got the person whom I defeated, whom they are rejected and
the
preferred
first time.
Me, they now gave him.
I think it's a try and error. It's a try and error. So you left, well, you left active politics. I think that's the right way to place it.
I left elective politics.
Yes.
Because I then now went into the real politics,
mm-hmm.
to the power center of politics.
Which is right next to the real power.
Yes.
Yes. I never got to hear the story, and maybe people who purchased the book will read bits of it, but how did that come about? Because for me, I assume
the short
such,
of it
such,
is that
yeah.
while I was in parliament during the 2001 elections, I was an electoral ally or supporter of the president and also seeking to get re-elected. Unfortunately, I did not get re-elected, but fortunately, the person I campaigned for at presidential level got elected.
Yes.
So, one good turn deserves another.
Another. Mm.
He asked me to go and work for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was... That's how
you say that honor as if you're friends on WhatsApp. You know, it's like, hey, my guy, you come and... You know, that's what it comes
I
off
think
as.
The person in question one time said that he had no friends. So I don't want to claim to
that
be
you are friends when he said he has no friends. But
which is I sometimes is a principle I agree with. That the friendship, the word can be misused. I think what you need in life is really people you work with, people who understand you, people who can be a support at different times.
I mean, leaving the title of MP and going on to be a press secretary.
Press secretary. Initially deputy press secretary.
Then eventually.
Year, then eventually press secretary.
That's a good trade-off.
To many people, it wouldn't be a good trade-off. But again, going to work with the president, obviously.
Now you don't have to dig in your pockets to pay fees and buy groundnuts and do what, you know?
And you are even in circles where people don't easily reach you.
There you go. So no one is asking for Mabugo and then what? So I feel like it's a good trade-off, don't you think? But isn't the job grander and bigger this time, despite, you know, because where you are, you're now at a point where you're hearing and seeing things. And you're at the point where certain conversations happen, and I feel like it's a lot more work, quote unquote, than it would have been if you were on the other end of politics.
Yes and no. I think MP is still MP in Uganda, but of course State House is State House. So each of them has their own advantages and disadvantages. But for me, it was also the only choice between the two. I was not, I had no, it was not either BMP
or this. Yeah, it was this. One. Is this what's on the table?
Yes.
We've talked about honor's almost career. I think that's how I'd term it. But honor is a human being. He's a man. Yes. Today stands as a family man. And at what point do you say, wait, I should also, you know, find someone and create a family and have another work-life balance, as they call it? When did you start that journey?
I've actually been married twice.
To be honest. So. You must have a book of lessons when you go through that. And you're a father.
I'm a father.
Yes. Your oldest and youngest being?
20s and...
Oh, wow.
Early life.
So they understand what dad does, who dad is, you know, that kind of... Yes, has anyone taken towards your direction?
So far, nobody's taking the line of journalism.
Oh, no.
Someone is going in the line of law, which I rejected.
So it's okay. It's okay.
Journalism will come along the
way. Yeah, that's interesting. You left the power center, as we're calling it, and I want to build... Was it a direct transition to NBL?
Direct transition to NBL, yes.
Were you headhunted for the role? What role were you going to? It wasn't legal affairs.
I was headhunted, so to say,
okay.
Because I did not apply.
Yeah.
I was headhunted, but of course I spoke to some people.
Oh, okay.
Nile Breweries. Yeah.
But what's your fourth song choice first?
I want something in akogo.
Akogo.
Akogo is the artist of music instrument.
Desert Island Discs on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.
Desert Island Discs, and we have honor and you, last and current part of your life. You have your book. It's Tears and
Triumph.
Triumph.
My life with Yoweri Museveni and others,
mm-hmm.
including Flavia.
Oh, I mean, let's be honest, honor. We could have name dropped the rest of us. My life with Flavia and others. Smart enough to have chosen your life with Museveni and others, but. How long did you take to work on this piece, Tears and Triumph, your book? When did the idea start to, I should write a book about my story?
Yeah, it was one of my retirement plans.
Mm.
Yeah, I thought by the time I exit formal employment, I should be able to celebrate my achievements
time.
And my trials and tribulations.
True. When does it hint in mind that at some point I will stop?
In the At Nile Breweries, we people retired 55 years.
Mm-hmm. You can't amend any.
Of course, you can swear affidavit to become younger if you choose.
Please.
But I thought I didn't have to do that.
Okay.
I thought I went in to contribute and I'd done my bit.
Okay.
And it was time to step aside and let others. As I've always believed in this saying that greatness is starting something that does not end with you.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, so, yes. If something can live off,
live
on even after you, then you've succeeded, actually. Who was the most excited about this decision? After you, of course.
My wife maybe has embraced it now.
Now?
But
she didn't even...
Initially, like everyone, there's always doubt. Are you sure? What are you going to...
Because you're still energetic, Ona. I think it was a case of, why are you running? Keep working and see until
and
you're
Uganda
tired.
Uganda is a land of no age limit.
Yeah,
no,
that's why I said you could have amended a few things and continued to work. Were you tired, though?
No, I was not tired. That's why I'm now doing something else in the same company.
Yeah.
So, but I think it was just about doing something different. If you look at my other
trajectory
in life, I've always wanted to do something different.
No regrets in your decision to retire?
No regrets. No regrets.
What else do you believe was an honor thing, you know, that, yeah, when you look back, people might miss that. I know we talked about not talking about people's perspective, that they're those to share it. But what you look at your story and say, yeah, I put my touch to this. How would you talk about that?
At Nile Breweries, I think for me, the main thing was our ability to connect with, initially, as I told you, people said, beer. Just beer. They didn't understand
beer. And they said, you're going to sell beer.
Yeah, they didn't understand beer. They think the brewery is simple about selling beer. It's not.
It's the final product.
Yeah, the brewery is actually about agro processing and the agriculture. We brought it to light by showing that the farmers who help us get grains for making beer are very important.
And then
we embedded a lot of our activities, our corporate investment in the communities, providing clean water, providing scholarships.
Yeah.
And we're able to lift the story of beer to beyond just the product people drink, to make beer be part of society.
Right.
And indeed, alcohol has been with society for... I grew up in a family, my dad, my brother, some of them were drinking.
Mm.
So I always knew that drinking was...
You don't drink.
I don't. Mm. I've worked in the brewery for 17 years, but I've failed to start.
I guess you'll never start, because you sat in the middle of it and didn't start.
Yeah, I've failed. You know, there was an old incident when I was young that I think traumatized me to drink. My dad gave me a glass of some spirit and knocked me off. So since then,
it wasn't a good feeling.
But I know people who are drinking. They look good. They feel good. I have no issue with them.
To each their own, Ona. To each their own.
Yes. Yeah.
So I'm glad. So you've left a mark 17 years later, and
now you're
on the board. So you're not really out of NBL.
No.
You're still part of Nile Breweries, very much so, and you're still part of a couple of decisions that will be made. So we'll see the difference you will make. But that's on the Nile Breweries end. What else is Ona doing? Because now you're hunting.
I'm also on a couple of other boards. I'm a chairman of Soroti Fruit Factory.
Would you say you've lived a full life, in hindsight, if you now look back?
Yes. I would say 99%.
That's a lot.
That's why I wrote the book.
Your book is available everywhere?
My book is available
for people to read
everywhere.
The story. For someone who's listening, who's listened to your story and followed the trajectory, will buy the book. What would you say were the spices or the things that made Ona's success story that you would then also be able to trickle down or impact into other people to tell them if these are the pillars you hold on to, success will come your way?
The resilience, the perseverance, the authenticity, acknowledging who you are, knowing your strengths, your weaknesses, and just being yourself, being yourself, and then doing your best,
yeah,
and of course knowing when to move.
Which you've exercised. You've honestly exercised. That it's okay. You know, so when you're still able to be a good dancer and be appreciated, walk away.
Applause is loudest.
It's loudest. You can still hear it. Walk away. Yeah, I think I've also practiced that in a bit here and there. But it's been lovely getting to hear your story 25 years later. Yeah. Thank you for the time.
We contradict ourselves.
Yeah, thank you for making time to tell your story here on Desert Island Discs. Now we want to hear the final song as we say goodbye.
A happy one. We got okay. Love.
Don Williams. Yeah.
And walk away from salary.
We got with love. With no money. No. We got love even with no money. Yeah?
Yes.
Ah, yes. Owner has money. Retiring doesn't mean you don't have money. No, but thank you. Thank you for telling your story. And we look forward to getting more of the snippets in the book, Tears and Triumph. You said it's available everywhere.
Absolutely.
All bookstores. Thank you. That's it for Desert Island Discs. Good night.
You got me. We got something everybody else can see. Me, I got you. We got a good thing, honey, you know we do. Friends, they all know, 'cause we can't help but let it show. Smiles, we can't hide. We got something just too good to hold inside. We don't need no money, honey, you and I. What we've got together, money just can't buy. What we've got, there's plenty of. I got you, you got me, we got love. Honey, we just keep on keeping on. 'Cause love makes us strong. As long as we got love, we can't go wrong. We don't need no money, honey, you and I. What we've got together, money just can't buy. There's plenty of. I got you, you got me, we got love.
Desert Island Discs with Flavia on Capital FM. Fresh hits for Uganda.